This is Talk Is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, this week is Lexis Chardet, comedian, local comedian. You can see her on the various open mics around town. Did this interview a couple of months ago, so things have changed. So look up your local comedy open mic on the interweb. A little commentary. I just want to say, I notice the time of this recording, negotiations have broken down, and both Ukraine and Israel has broken the ceasefire. I just want to say, why aren't we sending UN troops into these places to just shut the whole thing down? And the reason is because our corporate foreign economic extractive economic policy has brought us to the brink of nuclear war. So that's why we can't send in the UN troops, international force, to just shut these places down, because we're not sure that either Netanyahu or Putin would fire nuclear weapons upon them. So there's something for you to think about that no one's talking about. But yeah, let's send an international force into these places and a peacekeeping force and shut them down until we get new negotiations. That's what's supposed to happen right now. All right, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media. Coming up, comedian Lexis Chardet with some really good advice for you, those of you trying to start a comic career in this corporate climate that we have. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media. All right, I'm here talking with local comedian Lexis Chardet. Lexis, welcome to KEPW.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You do, what is that Wednesday open mic? You do it every other?
We have an open mic on Thursday. It's weekly Thursday at Manifest Beer Company, 9 o'clock, Thirsty mic.
So that's every Thursday, but so you're not doing the Wednesday one that alternates?
No, we're not doing that one anymore.
Back and forth. All right, and so how long have you been doing comedy?
This year will be 13 years.
Wow. All right. And so let's just pitch you. You did a charity benefit recently, right?
Yeah, I started a nonprofit last year.
And so can you tell me about that a little bit?
Yeah. So the nonprofit's called Lexi's Playground. Right now we're focusing on working with children doing improv. Improv is how I got into comedy, and I honestly wish I would have got into it at a younger age, because it really helped me blossom. I was pretty shy, pretty quiet. Most people that know me in real life outside of comedy, they're usually pretty surprised that I do comedy, because I am kind of a pretty quiet person. I can be very observant and just take everything in. But improv definitely changed that for me. And so I want to give that opportunity to young kids to be able to be assertive and be creative. Because when you have those skills that you learn from improv, it can really flourish your life and what you want to do. So yeah, we're working with kids mostly, but we have some other things that we want to work towards, like helping comedians with their careers and whatnot. So that's what Lexi's Playground is all about.
All right, and so it helps the kids. A lot of us are working out our personal trauma at the open mics, so it helps. It helps to get less stage fright, to be comfortable talking in front of people.
Absolutely, yes.
Do you have an example of a kid who's been changed through work through improv?
Yeah, you see it almost immediately. I've been working with some girls over at Ophelia's Place, which is a nonprofit specifically for girls, providing a safe space for them. And we do a weekly workshop over there. And there'll be some girls that come in and, you know, they don't really want to participate. They kind of just want to watch. and they don't, you know, do the warm up. But after they kind of see what we're able to create and what the games and activities that we want to do, you know, they really get into it. And even when they decide that they want to do it the first time, they may be kind of shy and quiet and maybe not project as much. But then you really start to see them open up, because you really are just being in the present moment and thinking on the top of your head, which is a way of really trusting yourself. I think we as adults, especially, and even as children, we get too much into our heads and thinking about what's the right thing to say, what's the right thing to do. And so improv really just helps you kind of get back to your instincts and trusting that gut instinct.
And can you give me an example of an exercise, just out of curiosity? I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in Los Angeles, right? Mm-hmm. You're from Los Angeles?
No, I'm from Eugene. I lived in Los Angeles for 6 years.
There's a place in Topanga Canyon. It was David Carradine's studio or whatever. And I remember as a kid, they made you stand in a spotlight. And so you had to do something in the spotlight was one exercise. Is that, what type of stuff are you having them do at improv?
So one of our warm-up games is like a classic game, yes and, which is like a traditional improv rule, which is you don't ever disagree, you always go along with the flow. So if I were to say, hey, Sus D, you are crazy and it smells like you didn't take a shower, instead of saying, oh my God, no, you would go, yes, and you would just add on to it. And right. So that's just like a fun game, going along with it and then, you know, going off the top of your head and adding something onto it.
Oh, so you start them off right away. That's basic improv. So you give them the full Monty there of the improv. There's no kids improv or something.
I mean, I definitely take, so I studied at Upright Citizens Brigade in Los Angeles, and then, you know, their second city, and each school kind of has like their different principles that they go by. But I try to break it down in kind of like simple games that the kids can get. I think the most challenging thing with the kids is sometimes like they don't make the scene make sense. So you kind of have to keep them on track. So sometimes I do have to stop them and say, okay, let's start the scene over and make sure that the choices that you're making make sense so everyone can follow along. I think that's the biggest challenge with the kids, is because they just want to go with whatever they have going on in their head, and they don't really care what anyone else is doing. Sometimes they just want the spotlight on themselves. But those basic games and warm-up games, like those short, like we don't do a lot of long-form improv. We do a lot of short-form improv, just like quick games. So they really get the hang of it.
All right. That's awesome that you're doing that, because comedy is, there's a lot of people doing it right now. And so if you can get started early, you're definitely have an advantage over the rest of us there. Although I like to think our life experiences help with... You have to have some life experiences to do comedy.
Absolutely.
So there's kind of a trade-off there. All right, so Diana Ramsey is one of the comics that is one of the local comics, and she came up with this question that I always ask all the comics is, what was your first time doing stand-up like? Did you bomb?
No, I actually did very well. When I watch the video, though, sometimes I cringe. like, who was that person? Changed so much since then. But my first stand-up experience was at Flappers in Burbank, California. I signed up for one of their open mic bringer shows, which essentially you sign up for it and, you know, you're supposed to bring a certain amount of people. I think I brought like one person. And I had 5 minutes that I'd been working on for, I don't know, 4 weeks with one of my friends that kind of convinced me to do comedy. And I did well. I mean, that first 5 minutes, like I still use that material, and I've evolved it and expanded on it. So it's kind of been like, that was like my staple. And I still watch that video every once in a while, but it was definitely scary, but I also had fun.
Right. And so you didn't take a class with them?
No, I didn't take any classes at Flappers. I started stand-up after doing improv, so I think the improv definitely helped. So I did improv for a year before I started writing for stand-up comedy.
Was that in L.A., Groundlings?
No, it was at UCB.
Oh, UCB.
Upright Citizens Brigade.
Oh, okay. And yeah, but yeah, because Groundlings is a famous improv place. A lot of stars have come out of L.A. in there.
Because I was just in New York, and I didn't think of, I don't think of New York as the place where comics come from, but I guess more come out of New York than they do in L.A. There's, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities down in L.A.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities in New York, too.
Right. Well, so, and what, so what advice would you give to somebody that's trying to start out? A bringer show is, you have to have friends to do a bringer show.
Yeah.
So that's a bit difficult.
Essentially, you're not getting paid. You're paying for your stage time by bringing people to buy drinks and buy tickets.
But I mean, if you have a built-in audience, you're ahead of the game, right?
Oh,
there.
Yeah,
if
for sure.
If you can, with bookers and stuff, if you can show that you already have a few people that you can bring in.
Yeah, I mean,
you will get booked.
Bookers love to hear, hey, I have people that want to see me perform. They're like, yep, let's book you. They don't care how funny you are. Just come. They, you know, we need to sell tickets. We need to sell drinks. That's how we make our money. So when I was in Phoenix, they did something similar at the Tempe Improv where they do like new faces of comedy, and they just book like 30 comics. And depending on how many people you bring depends on when you're going to go and the lineup and how much, you know, if you get a little extra time. And it's just like a night that the club makes extra money for people that, you know, are wanting to try comedy and have friends that want to see them on stage.
All right. So what if you don't, like most of us, we don't have an entourage that we can bring? Because, I mean, even if you do have friends, it's difficult to ask your friends to show up for an open mic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that you don't have friends, but inherently comics are loners inherently anyway. So what do you do if you don't have a built-in audience to show up with already?
You got to find your audience. I mean, that's how you do it. I mean, you're, you know, where do you work? What clubs are you a part of? There's always someone that's going to support you. So yeah, we can be loners. We can isolate ourselves. But if you really are trying to create a career for yourselves, you got to build your fan base.
Well, but so you got to build a routine first, though.
Absolutely. Yes.
So the open mics are a good place to do that. Any tips on what are you doing? Are you, like I have a 5-minute set. I keep trying to do 5-minute sets and write those down and then move on to another 5-minute set. Is there any technique that you're using to practice your routine?
Well, I follow Judy Carter's Comedy Bible. That's kind of been Bible for me. There's a lot of good exercises in there. When I teach my stand-up comedy classes, I use a lot of her principles. I think taking classes or reading a book, anything that kind of teaches you the basic structures of how to write a joke, the basic rules of comedy, is going to help guide you because it is formulaic. It really is. You know, laughs per minute is super important, especially when you're just trying to get the audience to listen. The main thing is you want the audience to listen and engage to what you're saying. And so doing exercises, anything to make you a stronger writer, and then having that support group around you too of other comedians. Sometimes if I'm writing something and I'm like, maybe I tried it on stage and it just didn't hit the way that I wanted, you know, I may go to another comic and ask like, hey, how would you punch this up? I may go to multiple comics and ask, hey, how would you punch this up? And take what I like best out of what I was given and then rewrite the joke. Comedy really is a team sport. We have to write things that are relatable, that people can relate to. So when you get kind of opinions, I know there's a lot of comedians that like hate it when other comics are like, hey, that was a great joke. Let me give you a tag or whatever. I personally love it because it really is like, we got to make each other better. And I take that as a compliment that someone is wanting to like give that small investment to me to make my material stronger.
Well, so that's just it, is there's a lot of support at the open mics that you can get feedback from.
Some open mics.
Yeah. Although, well, yeah, comics are a difficult audience to, you're not going to get a lot of laughs from an all comic open mic, but they're still very supportive of each of us.
Yeah, I agree.
And, so also they'll tell you like I'm asking, a lot of people are not getting my references, and I'm trying to do a political set too. So that's just it of what you're saying. It's difficult to do. It has to be relatable to the audience. So if you're too far in one way, that's not going to work. Right. Do you have examples of going too far, you think?
Well, for one thing that I've noticed is, like, I try to keep up with pop culture. I don't really watch the news a lot. I don't have cable anymore. But, you know, based off what I see on, like, Instagram and Facebook, I try to keep up with that stuff. I try to kind of, like, you know, every once in a while read TMZ and see what's going on. Because, like, being an L.A. comic, like, when I lived in L.A., you know, people love the stuff about the celebrities. And so I would write a lot of pop culture jokes as, like, current events, as that, you know, first 2-3 minutes of relatable material that, you know, everyone may understand before I get into, you know, more personal jokes. I've noticed that here in Eugene, sometimes those jokes don't hit as well. You know, it's just, and I also think that we're just in a different time now. Like, a lot more people, like, don't watch the news, don't want to keep up with celebrities and stuff like that. And I totally understand, because I'm kind of in the same boat. So, you know, sticking to the current events, politics is always, like, really touchy. I think the best way that a comic can do anything political is really taking a perspective from both sides, because then you're going to win the full audience, and kind of having a neutral position and just pointing out, like, what's funny about it.
Right. I noticed George Carlin, even though I would call him liberal, he makes fun of liberals too. So it's important to be balanced.
Yeah, you got to be able to make fun of yourself. Uh-huh. And that's why I think so many comics get kind of hung up in, like, a self-deprecating type of comedy, you know. But there is, like, I can't remember who was explaining it or who it comes from, but I remember this one comedian who was a friend of mine that was explaining the point system of comedy. It's like, you want to stay at zero. And so when you are self-deprecating, that gets you at +1. Or if you're self-deprecating, that gets you at -1, right? But if you get too negative, then you're going to lose the audience, because you're going to start making them sad. When you start making fun of other people, you're at, you know, +1, +2. But you don't want to put yourself up on a pedestal and make it seem like you're better than everyone. So you want to try to stay at zero and kind of fluctuate through there. And I don't know, that just resonated with me. And so I think the same thing goes with, you know, punching up, punching down, right? Like, if you're going to punch, you want to punch up, you don't necessarily want to punch down. That's kind of like the rule. You can break that. But I think it's okay if you punch down if you're also kind of punching at yourself.
Well, so you're talking about insulting the audience and insulting yourself, basically. You can not go too far in either way.
Yeah, not necessarily insulting the audience, but the audience may get insulted because they may be in the category of people that you're making fun of.
Right. We have one of the godfather of comedy here in Eugene is Seth Milstein, and he was telling me, I was asking him about...
Is that what you call him, the godfather?
Well, he was in...
I call him the comedy daddy.
Yeah. Well, he was in The Weekly as the godfather. So, and I asked him about, David Brenner had this bit about where there was no fat people in concentration camps. And David Brenner is Jewish, mm-hmm. so he could make that joke, but David Brenner is real thin. So he's making fun of fat people, but he's still skinny. And so somehow he gets away with it. But that's what Seth was saying to me, is I was making fun of, I had a trucker joke about cannibalism or whatever, and morbidly obese truckers, and that's what he was saying, is I'm not exactly thin myself, so like you're saying, you can relate, the audience can relate to you because you are not perfect either.
Exactly.
I don't know if I may explain that right. All right, so people have been telling me about festivals and contests. I didn't get it that a festival, you apply to a festival and you might not get picked, but they're taking those application fees to the festival is how they're paying for the festival.
Yeah.
So do you recommend going to festivals?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've done a number of festivals, and honestly, each one has, you know, expanded my network, my circle. It's made me stronger as a comic, because, you know, you don't want to show up to a festival and do a weak set. Like, you want to, you know, go strong. So yeah, I think I highly recommend it if you have, you know, if a comic has the funds to go. I mean, the fees aren't too crazy. It's usually like $25 to $50 for a submission fee, but then, you know, the travel depending on where it's going. So like for me personally, I like to try to aim for festivals that are in cities where I have a friend or a family member that I can stay with and kind of kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. And then also, you know, have a support system of people that will be there for me. But yeah, I highly recommend it. You get to see a lot of really great comics. You make some great connections. You never know what kind of opportunities can, you know, come from those. Sometimes there's prizes in the comedy festival, especially if there's a contest. Sometimes there's, you know, scouters or managers, so to speak, that are looking for new talent to either represent or, you know, if they're producing some sort of project. So you really never know what comes out of those opportunities. And it really is a good idea to hit that comedy circuit because you're also touring. So it expands your audience as well.
So do you have to be asked? I guess you can, you just
anyone
submit
can apply.
Anyone can apply. You send in a video. So it's a good, as soon as you can, you want to get some video too at the open mics.
Yeah.
Or wherever you're.
Yeah. I mean, open mic videos. I mean, ideally coming from a booker standpoint, you know, you want to see someone that's doing a set where, for one, you know, they're getting laughter. There's you know, engagement. For the comedy festivals, sometimes what they're looking for is you performing at a club or at a certain establishment. You know, they want to see a logo on the wall, but you can get away with doing, you know, a regular performance, maybe a private performance. The open mics can be a little bit tough because of the audio in the background. You know, like, obviously you want the audio to be clear, to be able to see you, hear the joke, hear the laughter. So I'm very particular about the videos I choose to submit to comedy festival. I didn't submit to as many comedy festivals as I wanted to last year because I still feel like I don't have the perfect video. So record everything, video if you can. Open mics, I typically don't record video. I'll just record audio. But then there are times that sometimes I wish I did record video because there was a good audience that wasn't just comics and the jokes hit really well. So,
oh yeah, I wouldn't submit just audio.
No, you don't submit just audio. I'm saying that I don't film myself at open mics with video. I usually just do audio.
For your own.
Yeah, for my own reference.
Review your own stuff, yeah. That's a good idea, too. That's a little tip there, too. So, but again, you want audience. They're looking either way, a booker or someone that's doing a contest. They're still looking for audience reactions. So,
yeah.
Because, well, because for an example, I did record one where there was only two. It was one of these paid mics, but he gave you 10 minutes, so I was looking to get a 10-minute video that way. But there was only a couple of people in the audience, a couple other comics there, and they graciously laughed loudly, but it's not the same as having a room full of people laughing at you, at your jokes. So.
Yeah.
All right, and so contests are different, though. Contests are a little bit harder. Now you really got to be on your game.
Yeah, I would say the same thing for the fest, too, because most festivals are contests, but then there are just these, you know, one-off contests, too. And I haven't really submitted to any just contests before, but I've had some friends that have. Some of them are, like, festivals in themselves. Like, there's the World, the World Champions of Comedy or whatever that they do in Vegas, and they also do it in St. Louis and all that. They have it a couple different places, and same sort of process. You have to, you know, submit a video and get accepted into the contest, and then you're competing. There's multiple rounds. When I did the Portland Comedy Festival in 2018, there was rounds, so I, you know, made it through. You had like two rounds to get voted into the final round. And so the second round I got voted into the final round, and then the final round there was like 10 of us that competed for like the main prize. So, and yeah, you really do have to be on top of your game.
Right. And then you have to be able to be available too. You might not get called. It might take a week. Some of these contests take a week or a week long.
I've noticed that like in Portland, some other contests that I like the for the comedy festivals. It's usually just in a week, but I've seen in Portland that they'll do like a whole thing over the summer. So yeah, you do have to make sure that you're available on whatever that schedule is.
Mm-hmm. All right, and so getting before we get away from style, the other thing you work out on the open mics, and this is why some of them are paid. You pay $5 to go in there. Is I notice you can. It's amazing that one place you'll get a lot of laughs and then another place you won't get a lot of laughs. So it's important. Your timing is one of the things that you work out at these open mics, right? I notice where you put your pauses is very important.
Yeah, I mean, you should always be pausing after your puns and expecting, you know, that laughter, even if it doesn't come. But as far as, you know, you having a joke that kills one show and the next show it doesn't, or the next mic it doesn't, that's really all it boils down to, connecting with the audience. So something's happening where the audience isn't connecting with you. And, you know, I mean, it's part of the gig. I mean, I have jokes that I know kill, and there'll be nights where, like, I'll be killing on everything else, and this one joke that I'm like, oh, this is going to be the killer joke, it just doesn't land for some reason. So, yeah, I mean, like, it comes along with it.
Well, but don't be discouraged, too.
Yeah, don't be discouraged. Keep going.
Keep going to try another mic. So, all right, so you host a lot of mics. What's the benefit of hosting?
So I host a lot of shows. I don't really host any mics right now. The weekly mic that we have, Mike Spain hosts on Thursdays. But the benefit of hosting, especially as a new comic, is you're getting so much time, so much stage time, because you're going up in between every single comic. You're introducing each comic. If you're really taking the opportunity to listen to what all the comics are saying, it gives you an opportunity to call back on other comics' jokes and really sharpen your skills and your wit and your comfortability of being on stage, because being comfortable on stage is half the battle. It's so important. Like I tell new comics, like, it's so important to be comfortable in what you're wearing on stage, because when you're uncomfortable, the audience can tell, and it makes them uncomfortable. Everything is so transparent and transfers to the audience. So if you are a new comic and you're trying to get into comedy, find a space at a local business, maybe you have a friend that owns a spot or whatever, and just start hosting a mic. It's honestly the best thing that you can do.
And well, you mentioned, I didn't realize you're not supposed to wear shorts at even the open mics. They want you to be presentable as if you're going to be on you could be pulled into the Tonight Show at any moment, I guess.
Yeah, so that's just like a general rule of theater. You're not supposed to wear shorts or open-toed shoes. I think there are some exceptions in certain situations, but that's a big no-no at like going to a comedy club. I mean, you think about it like you're hosting a game show, right? Like you're hosting this like fancy dinner. Like, you really want to dress to impress. You can still have your own sense of style, for sure. But, you know, like in New York, you know, they want you in dress shoes and slacks and a belt and a dress shirt. You know, there are some clubs that are really old school like that.
Well, because you never know when there's going to be a booker there. So I'm tempted to say that if you're just working stuff out and you're not trying to get booked, show up in shorts. But even then, you never know when there's going to be some contact.
Yeah, absolutely. There. I mean, I also did comedy in 6 years in Arizona, where it's hot as heck. So I think I saw a lot more lax there than I did in L.A. And, you know, even I've worn sandals on stage and stuff like that. And I think there's like, you know, a little bit more leniency towards women when it comes to like what you're wearing. But I feel like it's definitely a little bit more strict when it comes to the men.
Well, and I was trying to ride my bike to the open mics, you know, to keep my carbon footprint down, and you just wear shorts on a bicycle. But
you got to get those shorts with the zip on bottom leg. Uh-huh. Or just bring some extra pants with you.
Right. Your change pants or wear long pants on your bike with that little clip to keep
I don't think like dressing up for an open mic is really a big deal, but if it's an open mic at a comedy club, then yeah, you probably would want to wear something a little bit more presentable.
All right, but so hosting though sort of helps you get gigs too, because now your people are, you know, they'll kind of return the favor to you when there's a gig. You've been hosting a mic that they've been on. Doesn't that help you get? I'm talking about showcases now.
Yeah, I guess it could, especially if you're a good host. It can definitely open up some opportunities for you to open at other shows. Bookers are always looking for an opener that is warm and welcoming and, you know, getting the audience engaged. So if you're a good host, it's definitely going to open up some opportunities for you to open for bigger acts.
And that, it just reminds me, when I was in New York, I went to a taping of The Daily Show, and the warm-up comic was this guy was an audience comic.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are amazing. That
crowd work?
Doing crowd work. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. You don't necessarily have to be a crowd comic. In fact, it's difficult to be a crowd comic at the open mics because you need an audience, and usually comedians aren't good audience for you to practice crowd work.
Yeah, because they're gonna. I mean, I know when I get asked things, and I'm a comic in the audience, I'll say things, I'll make puns, I'll even tell some of my own jokes.
Right. So, yeah.
I mean, it can you know, make the show better, but. Yeah, it's definitely better to kind of have like more authentic answers for sure. But no, I mean, like, hosting definitely does help with crowd work. It gives you those opportunities to kind of like check in with the audience in between other comedians too. So,
all right. So, what do you do? How are you guys getting? I'm still not getting asked to be on a showcase. So, but
you don't wait to get asked. You go and you ask.
Okay, so ask the other comics.
You need to ask. Yeah. Closed mouths don't get fed. So if you're wanting to get gigs, you got to put yourself out there. It's great when you get asked, because that, you know, I love it when I get asked, because it's like, okay, obviously I'm doing something right. But there are months where I like, you know, really like the summer, I really try to focus on doing as many gigs as I can as a summer as a performer, because as a booker, it's harder to book out shows. So I'd rather focus on performing. But you got to go and see who's hosting shows and say, hey, give them your bio, give them some footage and say, I'd really love a spot on one of your shows. Please let me know if, you know, you have anything available. Or let them know specific dates that you're looking for. There's a lot of, depending on like what city you're in or where you're going, there's, you know, Facebook groups that you can get on and see where the bookers are, what those shows are, and you can reach out that way, or you can go to the shows. It's always great to support, you know, the show that you're wanting to be on. Go support the show, be there and talk directly to the booker and say, hey, you have a great show. You know, I'm available next month. If you have any openings, I would love to work with you.
Right. Showing up as an audience member is important.
Yeah.
Because they need audience members.
Yeah, they need butts and seats.
Yeah, so, all right, so how do you approach a venue then to start your own show?
You just find out who is in charge of events, if there's an event manager or if it's the owner directly, and you say, hey, I'm a comedian and I produce shows and I'm looking for a venue that I can do this type of show. This is how often I want to do it. Or if it's a one-time thing, I would love to kind of sit down and see, or is that something that you're interested in? They say, yes, I'd love to schedule time to sit down to kind of talk over the details.
Well, because, and then I keep running into places where this guy's just got it in his backyard too. So if you know someone with a garage...
You could literally do a comedy show anywhere.
Uh-huh. Well, the back of a pickup we're talking about.
Yeah.
Doing that, just parking a pickup in some grocery store.
Yeah.
Parking lot.
We did drive-in comedy shows in Arizona after COVID.
At the abandoned drive-in or whatever?
Yeah, they just set up this stage, like this tall stage, and had lights, and and comics were just standing up there telling jokes, and people were in their cars and they would flash their lights when things were funny.
So this was just an empty lot then? It wasn't an old abandoned...
I think it was just an empty lot or something. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, so there's a few options. You can just start your own venue if you have to. And
Zoom shows are still a thing too. A lot of people are still doing online comedy shows too.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can't sell beer, but I've been to ones where, you know, the guy has a thing of...
You can sell beer. You just have to get a special event permit through the OLCC or wherever.
Right. Live. Yeah. Well, but I mean, I'm not telling people to do anything illegal, but I've been to shows where the guy just has an ice chest and you give a donation and you'll get a beer. Mm-hmm. I don't know how legal that is, but, you know, it's just like having a party at your house.
Yeah.
You
just, if you're not charging for anyone to go in or you're not charging for the alcohol, then you can absolutely have alcohol. A lot of people do bring your own beer.
Yeah. And then I don't know how responsible you are for drunk driving from one of your venues, too, just as an aside. I would assume you are responsible just like from your house if someone gets drunk and crashes their car after drinking at your house. That would be...
I don't know what the rules and guidelines would be for that.
So are you... Did you say you're teaching comedy? You have comedy classes?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? Is it a tutoring thing or what?
It's usually a small class. I'll do anywhere from like 3 to 12 students at a time. And I work through the principles in the Judy Carter's Comedy Bible. And we work on creating their first 5 minutes based off authentic material. So off their life experiences. So it's fun because, people, in a way, it's kind of like therapy. People love it because, you know, they're diving through their life experiences and finding like the funny, and really learning how to find material based off their life experiences. And there's different tools and techniques that we do to help kind of get the creative juices flowing. And then we're constantly giving each other feedback, and then they're just kind of like getting their set together and then working on kind of crafting that set for their first performance. And then at the end of the class, we do like a class showcase. So I have them come to one of my shows and do their first 5 minutes in front of a live audience.
And these shows, you've already built up an audience for those.
Yes.
For those shows. Mm-hmm. So, 'cause other comics have told me that too, that they've gone to a show outside of a class. And that has gotten them, maybe possibly a good place to tape yourself,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So you spent some time in L.A. I know, what is it? There's the Comedy Store is on Fridays, but it's the Laugh Factory. You stand out there for 5 hours. If you go down there 5 hours before showtime and stand there, you're the one of the first of the 10 in line. On whatever that day is, you're guaranteed a spot at the Laugh Factory, and then you might get a call back. So, can you tell me about your time in LA and any advice?
I've never performed at Laugh Factory. I think when I was there, they weren't really doing any open mic opportunities. Most of my club experiences were at the Comedy Store, Flappers. John Lovitz when it was open at Universal Studios, and then the Improv on Melrose, and
that one was a lottery when I was down there the last time, the one on Melrose.
Yeah, and then the J Spot in Inglewood, which I'm not really sure if that's still open.
Uh-huh.
And then like the Haha Cafe, like there's some kind of like, you know, but mostly the Comedy Store. There was an open mic that they did pretty frequently on like the slower nights, because, you know, they got 3 rooms there and they were all bringer shows. So you would have to bring so many people and like literally like physically bring them to the booker or have them come up and say, oh, I'm here to see so and so before you even got onto the lineup. And I remember one time I was so pissed. I like got into it with the booker and I never went back after that.
Right. Well, and there is apparently a list of people that are not getting booked. So you don't want to get on the booker's list. But and apparently, I guess Mitzi Shore has since passed away, but she ran the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
So.
And then Polly was running it, but then he moved to Vegas, and now. I know Bob Wheeler is like the CFO. He was on one of my podcasts a while back. He has a podcast about money and having good relationships with money. He's a pretty funny guy.
Well, and then I noticed when I was at the Laugh Factory, the guy, it was Fraser Smith. I don't know if you're not old enough to remember. Fraser Smith was this great DJ in Los Angeles. And so now he's an old 60, 70-year-old man, and he's doing the improv, the Laugh Factory. And he's watching the audience to see the... He's not even listening to your material, really. He's looking to see if the audience is laughing. And then when I was there, this guy got a call back, but now he's not going to come back for another week. So he had to stay in Los Angeles for another week mm-hmm. for his callback. So you need to allow time if you do get a callback.
Yeah, I got to be flexible. Yeah. I know... So Laugh Factory has something called Chocolate Sundays and it's centered around black comedians. And I remember when they used to have it not at the Laugh Factory. But I remember I told one of my friends about it when I was still living in Arizona, and he ended up signing up for it or submitting to it online. And then like 2 years later, he finally got to go to the Laugh Factory and perform. So, yeah, there's like a long wait for the Laugh Factory on like almost anything there.
For returns, you mean, even if you do get a callback?
No. So how they do it, I guess you submit online and submit a video, and then they book you for it. And okay. So it was like I think it took them a year or 2 years to actually get on the show.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that doesn't mean, he didn't have to sit in LA for 2 years waiting.
Oh, no.
But this guy that got on, he finally took an apartment in LA and was looking for a cheap place to live. Because he had gotten a call back from the Laugh Factory, so now he's got to be in L.A.
Yeah,
and so you bring up something though. Genre too is the other thing is like for instance me, I do a political set, so I might want to try a venue that tends to be political, and they might be willing to book me. And then you mentioned black shows, and there's also gay and transsexual shows too mm-hmm. too. So. Basically, that there's another way. You know your audience. You need to know your audience.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, okay. So did you go to New York?
I haven't performed in New York yet. That's a goal of mine. My family actually lives in New Jersey, and each time I go out there, I haven't made the time to go. And since I've moved here from Phoenix, I have a number of friends that are actually in the New York scene, and I hear such great things about it. And so that's on my goal for 2025 is to like make some time to actually go out there and explore the scene.
Well, so yeah, check out the Broadway Comedy Club in the Industry Room is where I'm hearing that you can get picked up.
Mm-hmm.
But again, though, you have a place in New Jersey to stay. Yeah. So that's the issue that I had was... I was taking the bus in and out of New York from New Jersey, from the Motel 6 in New Jersey, which was a complete pain
yeah.
in the butt. So next time I think I'll look in Brooklyn or the Bronx or something and try mm-hmm. to find an Airbnb.
Yeah.
If I had planned to stay there.
Yeah.
So, but you have someone that you can stay with.
Yeah. So my family lives in New Jersey, and then I have a couple friends that live in the city. So,
so that's an ideal situation, though. Yeah. So if you can find somebody to stay with... All right. So, and Los Angeles too, though. Did you stay with someone in LA or what happened? I thought you said you waitressed in LA.
I lived in LA for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And had a job there while you were
yeah. mm-hmm.
trying to do the. And it's a lot like you're just being discovered at the soda
yeah.
counter.
I mean, I wouldn't say I ever got discovered, but but I mean, like, you know, my experience there, you know, definitely was challenging. I feel like the era that I started, it was like, I don't think I ever got paid to do a comedy show while I was living in LA. I didn't start getting paid to do comedy until I was in Phoenix. And even in Phoenix, there was a lot of unpaid gigs. That's one thing that I do kind of appreciate about the scene here in Eugene is it seems like everyone is working hard to pay each other, which is great. It's almost like we have kind of like a little comedy union. But at the same time, I do feel like it kind of creates this sense of entitlement for some of the newer comics that are only like 3 years in, kind of expecting to get paid when, you know, maybe they're not as strong as they think they are. And that's not throwing shade on anyone, but it's just like, I really had to work for my stage time and those opportunities. And, so it is hard when, you know, there's comics that come to me and they want time, or they're not happy with what they got paid. And it's like, hey man, I'm doing the best that I can, you know?
Right. You're really looking for exposure. You shouldn't be looking to get to try to make a living off of this.
I think that everyone should be able to make a living doing what they love, but you have to contribute to that. And, you know, when a comic gets to the point where they're getting paid $500 to do 30 minutes, you know, you got to look at how long that person has been doing comedy and perfecting that. They're not getting paid for that 30 minutes. They're getting paid for the amount of years that they worked to perfect that craft. And, you know, as a producer, you know, I do everything that I can to sell out these shows or at least get butts in seats. And so, you know, it's frustrating when you book comics that, and even if they're good, you know, they're not bringing anybody. And it's like, you know, you can't rely just on the booker to be the one to, you know, pay you. It's not all, it's a team sport. Everyone has to, you know, promote together. And that's kind of like my biggest struggle as a promoter. I try to incentivize comics for, you know, when they bring people, paying them more, but it doesn't seem like a lot of people want to hop on that opportunity. And it also is very easy as a comic, if you're performing a lot, to exhaust your audience. You may have a support group, but if you're, you know, telling the same set, you may have friends that don't want to come watch you because they've seen you do the same set 30 times already. Mm-hmm. So it is really important that when you are doing a new show and there are new faces in the audience, that you do try to connect with those people. I'm always trying to drop my Instagram, like, hey, if you like what you heard, please follow me on Instagram at Lex Tells Jokes, so people will follow me. Maybe they'll want to come see me again, or they'll share it with a friend or whatever, because you have to build your audience. That's how you make it to the next step. It's not about, you know, it's great to connect with other comics and get those other opportunities to perform, but I one thing that I see in our scene here is I don't see a lot of focus on comedians really trying to build their fan base with the audiences that are right in front of them. One thing that I've grown accustomed to after doing a performance is, and it's something that I've gotten away from that I'm trying to make sure I keep doing, is when a show is over, standing at the door and thanking the audience members for being there. Letting them know about more shows, like really like giving your attention to the audience, because you don't have a show if the audience isn't there, and expressing gratitude to them. Because often you'll just kind of see comics kind of like the show's over and then they go to the comics and they collect with each other and they start shooting the shit. It's like, no, you need to connect with the audience that's there so they come back and see you again and keep supporting you. And so it's a balance, you know. So yeah, I mean, producing and promoting is definitely not for the weak.
Well, and so Instagram and social media is a must for that.
Yeah,
too,
I mean, there was,
whether you like it or not.
Yeah, there was a time where I didn't have social media and I was trying to do comedy, and it was so hard. I've gone on and off social media like so many times, and honestly, I kind of wish that I didn't, because my following would probably be much larger, because I've started over like 3 times on social media.
And then, are you writing for other comics? Is there money in that?
There's writing in that. I haven't gotten to that point yet. I have some friends that do ghostwrite for other comics. I would like to get more into TV script writing, which I did in LA, not for any particular shows or anything like that, but just independent projects. But yes, there is money in that. I don't write for anyone, but I every once in a while I'll get asked by, you know, my friends or other comics to like help them, you know, punch up their material and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely money in that.
All right, and then I'm trying to wrap it up, but I notice in both in L.A. and New York, there's a lot of really beautiful people at these bikes, and a lot of them are aspiring actors and actresses. When you were in L.A., did you go to any auditions? I remember.
I don't
remember though. Was it in Variety? I went to one audition once, and I grew up in L.A. And unfortunately, I'm bald, and they wanted people with hair. But I almost talked them into putting me on some other part or whatever too. But I don't remember where I heard about that audition. Or is it Variety that you're getting? Where are you getting auditions from?
I don't know. It's been so long. I haven't lived in L.A. in almost like 9-10 years. I can't remember the name of the places I would go through. I mean, there was so many different places I would check. I think there was like L.A. Casting, and there was another one.
But those are places that take a percentage. They're just basically a hiring mill for auditions.
Yeah, I'm sure they take a percentage. I don't know what the percentage was. They just tell you what you get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're getting paid by the
company or
by
the
studio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then so and radio too though is another good way to get at least get yourself talking to people or on on a microphone.
Yeah. I didn't do any radio in L.A. I tried. They had a couple times where they're, you know, they would kind of do like, it was almost like a contest. The big radio stations, when like a host would leave, they would like be like, oh, we're looking for a new host. And it was kind of like this huge casting call thing where you have to go downtown and wait in line and all this. And each time that happened, it like conflicted with whatever else I had going on. And so I never really got the opportunity to try to get into radio in L.A. My only radio experience was when I was here in Eugene in college. I did college radio, and then I worked for a station called 94.9 Jams. It was the hip hop station at the time. They didn't last long though. I think they're only around for a couple of years.
Well, I can tell you in LA is KPFK is always looking for reporters that you can get on doing Pacifica. And I think New York, big cities, those are only in big cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco. All right, I'm trying to wrap it up. What about the Toastmaster clubs too? Have you ever done any of those where you go? And
boring.
It's mostly older men.
Those are for business professionals, and honestly, like I pitch my comedy class to business professionals that are tired of Toastmasters because it's boring.
So, well, is there anything else like that that you wouldn't think would help you with comedy, but does?
I mean, yeah, it can. It's to get over the fear of public speaking and to help you not say and space fillers and like. It's really just helping you communicate more clearly. They also, I think some Toastmasters, oh, maybe not Toastmasters, but like I know like in journalism, they kind of like teach you that journalistic rhythmic communication. Like you'll notice that in journalism, all the reporters, they talk the same and they have that kind of rhythm.
Uh-huh.
Obama does it. Presidents do it.
Right. His ums and ahs, he does those on purpose.
Yes.
Those are intentional. Mm-hmm. It's not that he's forgetting what he's saying. It's so that you have a chance to hear what he's saying.
Yeah.
The pauses.
Yeah.
So anything that can teach you anything like that. You know, it just reminds me too. One other thing on genre. I was at this one bit and this lady comes in there and you can tell that she's going to the old folks homes because she was an elderly lady. I think she was in her 60s, late 60s, and doing older person material. Mm-hmm. And talking about her things that happened to her as an old person.
Yeah.
So even going to the old folks' homes or the charity places, mm-hmm. too, anywhere, any place like that, that you can get experience.
Yeah.
All right. So anything else you want to say?
I don't know. Go write.
All right. And so go write as in...
Go write some jokes.
Go write some jokes. And where can we get a hold of you? You have an Instagram?
Yes. So my comedy Instagram is Lex Tells Jokes. And then my comedy club Instagram is Lexi's Comedy Club, L-E-X-Y-S, comedyclub.com. And that's where you can see all the shows that I produce.
All right. Lexis Chardet, local Eugene comedian. I highly recommend.
No one
she
says
does
comedian anymore.
Right. Right. It's generic. And but I really recommend your show because she's very good. So I really recommend if
you
get a chance to see her in town. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking over a four-leaf clover that I overlooked before. One is for sunshine, the other for rain.